Hello everyone, I'm George Myland. Well, thank you for coming back to my channel. Well, requiescat in pace Dirk Sauer. I hope I pronounced his name correctly. So he was a Dutchman who was best known for establishing the Moscow Times, which is an English language newspaper, a daily, and was the first English language newspaper in Russia or indeed any former Soviet country. So he was a journalist of rare intrepidity and integrity. Obviously got very far in his journalistic career, I think without having attended university. And obviously journalism is a trade, not a profession. Anyone who's paid for his or her reportage or commentary is a journalist. It's the only job you can do, still do whilst you're at school. So he was born in 1952 in the Netherlands, in a family of no particularly great wealth or with establishment connections. And he was into journalism and fascinated with politics from his earliest youth. He said he was deeply inspired by the the uprising 1968 in Paris when he was only 15 years old. Obviously, didn't participate, but he took an avid interest in it. He finished school, and he was sort of straight away working for radio broadcast. He'd been demonstrating even when he was 14 years old against the Soviet invasion of Czechoslovakia, you know, that August, because Czechoslovakia was pursuing socialism with a human face under Alexander Dubček. And Leonid Brezhnev thought this was a very dangerous example. They couldn't possibly allow a sovereign state to determine its own policy to free press, free elections, freeing political prisoners, allowing people to emigrate if they wish to, absolutely intolerable. Liberty had to be crushed. And hundreds of Czechs, unarmed Czechs, were killed. Murdered would not be too strong a word. If soldiers deliberately kill unarmed people, surely that's murder. That is not a battle. So it went on. So Dirk Sauer, he opposed this sort of brutality. He was a man of the left, a member of the Socialist Party. He had flirted with communism, but he soon regretted that and realized that Mao Zedong, Zhuxi, and Joseph Vissarionovich Stalin were absolute ogres. So when he was only 19, he was dispatched to Northern Ireland. 1970, the Ulster Troubles were erupting, and he reported for Dutch radio there. So he went to West Belfast. He established links with the IRA. I mean, I don't know what his take on this conflict was, but obviously he needed to be able to speak to them. So I wonder if they were a little bit suspicious of him, because they might say, well, if the Crown Forces wanted a spy, they could get a foreigner. So not someone who's English, Scots or Welsh or even for Northern Irish. So they get someone like that. And we don't forget where William III came from. He came from the Netherlands. Some Dutchmen still regarded William of Orange as a hero back then. Does that mean that he has leanings towards the loyalist side? But anyway, so far as I know, suspicion didn't fall on them. So he reported So he had fluent English. I think that's the way he perfected it. But he spoke with a mild Dutch accent. He didn't develop an Ulster accent. Back in the Netherlands, in print journalism and so on, broadcasting in English, he helped to research for Panorama, the BBC program, going to Southeast Asia just after the fall of Saigon. The Vietnam conflict was over. He went to Kurdistan in Iraq and elsewhere. He also met the Khmer Rouge, the far-left communist terrorists in Cambodia or Kampuchea, as they used to call it. So he had a social conscience. He talked about people being priced out of decent housing in the Netherlands. And when Queen Beatrix was inaugurated in the early 1980s, they didn't crown the person at all. There were a lot of demonstrations, and that people having the slogan "Geen woning, geen kroning," no accommodation, no coronation. And so that's why he produced a very well received documentary, "Een koninkrijk voor een huis," a kingdom for a house. Okay, so these people had taken over buildings. Now in Ireland at the time, and in Great Britain, it was very easy to squat. Population was lower. There were a lot of empty domiciles. People just taking over, trying to connect them to the mains, electricity and the water, getting it wrong, cause electrocuting themselves, and so on. So the hippie community, alternative lifestyle people, were just taking over buildings like that. So Anyway, obviously, they were eventually kicked out of these sort of places, but the accommodation situations only ever got worse. So then he was editor of De Nieuwe Revue, which is a Dutch magazine, not just in politics. And so he's a very well-known figure in the Amsterdam media scene. And in 1989, the Soviet Union was liberalizing, and people thought the Soviet Union had a very long way to run, that there'd be communism in some form. Even if communism was dropped, the Soviet Union would remain together, although separatist organizations had been legalized, or it was criminal to even suggest real autonomy for the Indian republics until the late 80s, but Mikhail Gorbachev was allowing them some liberty. So he got married in the early 80s to Elaine Verbeek, and they had just one child, I think. And that's when they moved to Moscow. The Russian Journalists Union had invited them, and the idea was to set up a attractive, colorful Russian magazine with that special sort of paper, you know, like the shiny paper, glossies, they call it, Moscow Magazine in English. But then it turned out that these were KGB officers who are doing this. Why? I suppose they wanted to project a more positive image for the Soviet Union. And so they get a Western journalist to give them their expertise and lend credibility to them. But so that never really got going. But the Moscow Times' most famous establishment was in 1992, the year after communism ended, and began giving it out gratis. But it was so popular that they were able to charge people for it. Obviously, it was a hard copy newspaper. Obviously, online didn't come in till right the end of the 90s. So exclusively in English, he learned Russian. Got to remember, in the early 90s, very few people in the Soviet Union would have spoken English, even to very low level, would have been, you know, like 5% or something. And okay, in Moscow, it would have been at least 10%, but still. So he had to learn it. Also, Vedomosti, which is a very well-respected business newspaper, he established that. Obviously, it is in Russian. And the Financial Times and Wall Street Journal were behind that. So he made an awful lot of money. It was very successful. He eventually sold the Moscow Times for 142 million euros. So he was a very wealthy man, but he didn't retire. He was always sort of physically fit, had his hobbies like sailing, cycling, and so on. Now, they turned against him, Putin, because Putin, after his humiliation, when he really got things wrong to do with the Kursk submarine sinking in August 2000, it was just 3 months after he was elected president, he swore that this would not let this happen again. But he moved stealthily, salami tactics, to restrict the media, to start taking over newspapers, magazines, radio stations, TV stations, one by one, until there's no freedom of expression left whatsoever. And Derek Sauer's interviews about this, about the insane situation after the invasion of Ukraine, where it was criminal to tell the truth. They're not allowed to call the war a war or use the words invasion or anything like that. No images of the suffering of Ukrainians. They're not allowed to report the endless atrocities committed by the Russian army and stuff like that. So he's saying, obviously, the Russian public really have no idea what's going on. And obviously, they swallow this propaganda, because so much of the mind is subconscious. That's all to do with repetition. It's incessantly dinned into them that this is liberation. And of course, even intelligent or wise people will fall for that. So that's it. So he broke a lot of stories about corruption and so on, didn't report the Chechnya conflict that much in the early 90s. So he had some Russian billionaires rather liked him, but obviously the FSB was spying on him, very much disapproved of his activities, came under increasing pressure. There was talk about charging him with fraud and so on. So he couldn't go back to Russia. He actually repurchased the Moscow Times in 2017, and that's when they ended the hard copy versions. When I started reading it was then, and it was all online. And obviously he couldn't go to Russia since the war was on. He managed to get his Russian staff out because they were in grave danger, getting very long prison sentences. And he helped other, free media organizations in Russia, like Dozhd, which is TV station, meaning rain and so on, them to establish himself, Medusa, as in Medusa is like jellyfish, bizarrely. I think they're in Latvia these days. He'd hurt himself in a sailing accident off the coast of Greece last month. But anyway, he died in Zeeland in the Netherlands just about 3 days ago, partly related to the injuries it sustained sailing. So that's him, a real titan of journalism. They don't make him like that anymore. How I wish I'd met him.